From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. Stephen Nelson, a Nampa man, died in April 2016 after responding to an online ad promising a sexual encounter. Instead, what happened, Stephen was attacked by Kelly Schneider, who yelled homophobic slurs while kicking him repeatedly with steel-toed boots. And then he stripped him and he robbed him in the pre-dawn darkness, and all of this happened near Lake Lowell. Now, the critically injured Nelson managed to walk naked and without shoes about a half a mile to a house where he was able to get help. Unfortunately, Nelson died several hours later at the hospital, but not before he was able to give Canyon County investigators detailed information that helped identify his killer. A lot of you may remember when all of this happened. Playwright Gregory Hinton has spent time over the years with Stephen's family, and with their permission, he has curated an assembly of impact statements from the sentencing hearing of Nelson's confessed killer. This piece is called Walking Stephen Home, and we are lucky enough to have Gregory join us today to talk more about this. Gregory, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me to discuss Stephen Nelson and his family.
So, Gregory, I'd like to kind of start, though, by really talking about your background, because, you know, you are a playwright, as I mentioned, but you really focus so much on you know, real life cultural issues. You've done things in regards to Matthew Shepard. What is it about, you know, these parts of our culture, these parts of our society, that made you want to really delve into this?
Well, I come from a rural Western background. I was born in Wolf Point, Montana, and raised in Cody, Wyoming, before we moved down to Denver. And I was interested in finding out more of my community's rural American Western heritage. And when I went looking in about 2009, there was really little to nothing. And I believe that our stories need to be told too. And fortunately, I partnered with many great Western American history and art museums who felt the same way. And so we developed with the Autry National Center here in Los Angeles a program series called Out West, and it was dedicated to shine a light on the history and culture of my community in the American West. And so I went looking, and I was able to reach out to folks in Montana, Wyoming, Utah, Idaho, Nevada, and there are many, many stories that are being lived and told as we speak.
Mm-hmm. So talk to us about how you learned about Stephen Nelson.
I partner with the American Heritage Center at the University of Wyoming, and they welcomed an opportunity to form an LGBT archive of the American West, which I brought the concept with them. So they funded me to travel to these other Western states to basically promote the archive and meet people. And it was because of this opportunity that I came to Boise. I looked up kind of what historical records might be here, and Alan Verta, who is a local Boise resident and scholar, invited me to come and give a talk at his Triangle Connection meeting. And so I flew in, I'm waiting for him to pick me up. I open the newspaper and I read about Stephen Nelson's murder, which had happened 2 weeks before. Oh. And I was very, very saddened about that, because I thought we were beyond all of that. So that's what started my interest in Stephen, and I never forgot him. So several years later, I was able to discover through some help with friends of Stephen's family, the impact statements written and read by them at the sentencing trial of Stephen's murderer. And there is an eloquence of grief that emerges that is so powerful. And reading through these statements, I basically saw how I could, with respecting everything that was said, I could interleave them into a written word piece with each member's, which each member of the family recalling their brother and basically the tragedy that that befell him and how they go on with that fact.
So before we really dive more into walking Stephen home, can we talk a little bit more about, you know, as you mentioned, these archives, right, with LGBTQ plus in the West, because I very much remember when Matthew Shepard was killed in Wyoming, and I grew up in the West. I grew up in a rural town in Washington State, and it's this thing where, as you said, you think this has gone away, but it has not. And have we come far? Some can say yes, some can say no. But there's also this idea that a man is a man, right, in the West. And I think it's fascinating that there are so many stories. And why was it important, you know, to archive these stories, to have an actual history of these, you know, these people who are living amongst us?
Well, a personal story here. I've been HIV positive for over 30 years, and I watched as gay men in my community started to get ill and die, and they often died without family present. That might be the first time their family even knew they were gay. And I watched as in my own building, a fellow died, and all of his stuff, his ephemera, the letters, his cards, his own particular writings, his photographs were just all tossed into the trash. And that was a pivotal moment for me because I didn't want that to happen to me. And and that basically is what inspired me to suggest to the American Heritage Center that we collect the papers of people in my Western community who lived happy lives and stayed where they were born, and just to give visibility to our lived experiences.
Mm-hmm. So with that said, we should note that Walking Stephen Home, there's going to be a complimentary reading of it this Saturday, September 9th at 6 p.m. at the Lincoln Auditorium at the Idaho State House. And this is all part of Boise's Pride event going on this weekend. Did you have an opportunity to ever meet with Stephen's family? Because they definitely gave their permission for you to do this. And I think that's important for our audience to know.
Correct. I was introduced to the family through a friend of theirs. And I initially reached out to Stephen's sister, Connie. I wrote her a note about what I planned. And the Nelsons have a weekly Saturday morning family meeting because they're spread out all over the country. And she introduced me to her parents. And I was able to, I communicated by conversation with them over the phone and also by emails through Connie. They developed a trust in what I did. I sent some other works that I had done so that they could see kind of how I might manage this coalescing of their impact statements. So they have been very touched by this. I know that other folks have reached out about doing some kind of a project about Stevens, but by curating their actual words and not adding anything more to them, I think it's been, I believe, an honorable way to present Stephen's story through his family's eyes, and they have kind of watched it every step of the way.
Mm-hmm. What was it like for you, as you mentioned, when you stepped off the plane and you're waiting for your ride, you know, in Boise back in 2016, and you read about Stephen and what happened to him? And I ask that question because I remember very vividly when this happened. And frankly, having, you know, even in the news business, right, where you cover all kinds of stories and issues and crime, it was still something that I had a very difficult time wrapping my head around, in the sense that how could someone do this? But yet then the courage that Stephen had to get himself to a safe space to tell people what happened to him.
Well, it was his life force that gave him that courage, and he basically woke up and, you know, found himself just completely, I mean, he had blood in his eyes. He was completely nude, as you said. And his father writes a portion of this in the impact statements. He decides to recreate Stephen's walk out of this dark place that he was in and to look for help. So he imagines Stephen's walk, and that is the most powerful. Edgar Nelson's words are the most powerful words I've really ever read about recalling a true story, and that's why I urge everyone to please attend Walking Stephen Home on Saturday night. This is a real family telling a true story about a beloved member of their family that something terrible happened to, and I have to say I know Judy and Dennis Shepherd somewhat well. And speaking to two families who've lost children, gay sons, in such a violent way, it's just too many, to mine their own personal grief from. It's the power of grief. It gives you an eloquence that you didn't know you had, I just am so looking forward to kind of the wonderful cast of volunteers that have been assembled, community leaders, to come and read the words of the Nelson family.
So set the scene for us, because it is a reading, and yet it is, people sitting on individual stools at lecterns, lights down. I mean, what made you decide to really just make it a reading, and to make it as simple yet I think as powerful as that?
I said this before, but I really believe in the dramatic value of the real words of real people presented without frills. Verbatim theater is basically drawing from sources, impact statements, court records, interviews, that sort of thing, and you create a piece written out of those. For anybody who's seen the Laramie Project, that was verbatim theater. And I just felt that the subject matter just required the simplest, most dignified presentation. And these aren't actors who are reading. These are, as I say, members of the community of Boise. And that is dramatic and extremely beautiful in my mind unto itself. I wouldn't really want sets with flowers and tables and, sofas, that sort of thing, while people are processing it. Because in fact, these statements were read in a courtroom, and that's about kind of as close as you can get to being a stark, sterile environment. So it's really generous of the capital of Melissa Wintrow to have arranged this for me. It was a vision I've had, and she made it happen.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I have read this script a couple of times, Gregory, and I literally cannot get through it without it bringing a tear to my eye, because that is how powerful it is. And were you touched in that regard as well when you saw these impact statements, even before you started putting them together to really tell this cohesive story of that day in court?
Oh yeah. I read them, and I was preparing for a Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival annual meeting, the Northwestern Division. And I always like to present something while I'm there. And I found this, and I just created a rough draft of the reading, and I read it myself, and the reaction by the audience was just really, really moving. And I don't know anybody out there who reading out loud for me, because of the age I'm heading toward, just helps me remember and feel things better. I'll just cop to that. But I read all of the pieces myself, and the reaction I got was very, very strong. So I again, this is owing to the Nelsons' ability to articulate what they went through, and that's what we will be experiencing at the Capitol on Saturday.
I mean, I'm sitting here actually looking at the script as we're talking, and I would love to read a part of it, but I mean, I literally get choked up because you, as you're reading these words, I mean, this is a family, as you said, going through such grief and trauma, but at the same time, I mean, so willing to put their story out there. What has that been like since the family has been able to see your work? I mean, to be able to really have Stephen be remembered, because even in these statements, as you listen to their grief and you feel it, but they also talk to us about who Stephen was. I mean, you get a better picture of who he was as a person, not just the way he died.
Correct. And I think of these crimes as being rural crimes, like from places that people like in Los Angeles would never even dream of going to, you know. And the fact is, LA ain't so great either when it comes to violence against my community. And I've been assaulted. I've been called the F-bomb. I've been threatened. I was threatened to have my throat slit just carrying my groceries back from my local grocery store a couple of years ago. And, you know, people are going, well, how are you walking? What? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But with the tenor of discord and hatred toward my community coming up in these last couple of years, it's of concern everywhere now. We all have to be careful, and our allies, I just want to emphasize, are so important to us now. We need our friends and our family to stand up for us. There are hundreds of proposed legislation to kind of thwart kind of our right to coexist all around the country, and we're in for tough times. And it's just not my community; it's other marginalized communities in the country right now, and so that's why I feel that, you know, I'm grateful that I can talk with you and your listeners, and I'm grateful that these pieces can live on without me. I'm coming to town. I was coming to Boise because I'm to receive an award along with the American Heritage Center from the American Alliance of State and Local History for an award for excellence in a rapid response to this particular phenomenon that's going on. They funded a piece I wrote called A Sissy in Wyoming. And that A Sissy in Wyoming is based on a true story of a Wyoming crossdresser who was a straight married man who just preferred to wear rodeo skirts and kind of all the, you know, what he went through. The freedom to be you and me, to quote Marlo Thomas, is pretty tough these days, and it's going to be tougher. And I would just urge any listener who's a friend or family member of any member of my community or anyone who's different, that yes, we'll fight to take care of ourselves, but we really need demonstrable support in terms of acknowledging that we have every right to live and breathe and live happy lives. We made such great strides. I'm just so concerned, and again, not just for the rural West, but for our big cities around the country, that people want a scapegoat to take out their misery on. And I, as a 70-year-old man, have to remember, gay man, that I'm a mark now. I mean, I don't say that. I just have to understand I need to be careful, and I can't always be careful. If I want to just go get a carton of eggs, that seems like a big task. But we really need to remain visible and positive in the eyes of ourselves and our communities.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking with us. As I said, this is so powerful. It is really, I think, necessary for people to see this. We've been talking with playwright Gregory Hinton about the reading Walking Stephen Home. There will be a complimentary reading of it this Saturday, September 9th at 6 p.m. in the Lincoln Auditorium at the Idaho State Capitol. It will also be streamed live at Idaho In Session. You just need to click on Lincoln Auditorium. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.